Namaste, everyone. Hello. Hope you're well. There's a beautiful south wind blowing right now. Must be some kind of a storm down in Florida, is there? Maybe? We usually get heavy winds when, but they're really pleasant. We don't get flooding. Anyway, I just spoke with Ajahn Sucitto. That was fun. So, this is the Zoom, FaceTime, all these different ways that we connect. And then at 4 o'clock, I'll be doing a pre-Zoom, as a practice Zoom for the, we're having a abbot's meeting next soon, about 60 of us, I think. So it's like, I'm glued to the computer screens now. But it's interesting, isn't it? Like Ajahn Sucitto and I were saying that it's surprisingly tiring being teaching to a screen. That surprised me. I thought I didn't know what I expected, but it was more tiring than I thought. Interesting. He's a beautiful man, isn't he? Yeah. I have the good fortune of some rather marvelous Kalyanamitta. I've known him since 78, and we've been through a lot. Because we both had longer hair and did different things at those days. And he's so dedicated to the Dhamma, and he's so erudite. Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant with words. Like, I'd love to do a book of his emails. His emails are so funny. Like, you know the seal picture? I sent the seal picture to him, and he said, fantastic display of yogic skills, but you should have worn your robes, don't you think? Well, yeah, I didn't think of that. So he's such a fine friend. So there, Nisanka, you put a couple of questions. One of them was, what's the difference between Dhamma Vijaya and conventional thinking in formal practice? So for those of you who aren't familiar with the word, Dhamma Vijaya is in one of those lists. Which list is it? This Seven Factors of Enlightenment? Is that one?
Yeah.
It's one of those lists, I forget now. But Dhamma Vijaya is the kind of inquisitive part of our contemplative life, where we can inquire around some aspect of Dhamma, but always in relationship to the reality of our own experience. And that's important, that you don't just leave the Dhamma as some kind of thought structure that you think you understand, but you're not connecting it to real life in real time, as I like to say now. And that's the idea of Dhamma, that you see it in your own life. So if I say something which is abstract and you can't see it in your own life, then it's not a truth that edifies you. You might, you may or may not believe it or find it interesting, but it doesn't really edify until it clicks, I would say, in your experience. So conventional thinking could be you're just mulling over one of the lists and you're thinking what that means, so you're just sort of in a kind of speculative intellectual mode, which would be all right, which would be more like the knowledge-based way we have thought and use thought. Well, whereas Dhamma Vijaya would be much more like, okay, they're talking about resistance. So what does he mean by resistance? So then you take that word and then you just begin to explore resistance just by saying the word, maybe. And then you observe. And you observe. So it's a quiet observation, stimulated by a suggestion from a teacher or teachings. Yeah, it's not just thinking about it. It's like it's a way of focusing quiet attention on some aspects of your Dharma experience. The classic would be, why do I suffer, right? And if you just went into analysis of, well, I suffer because da 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 da, that wouldn't be the same experience of like, what is suffering? So the question then makes you conscious. So what's the problem? And then you start to just watch and observe, and then when you get some insight, oh, I don't want that. So the insight comes from the silent attention, and then you begin to see, oh yeah, that's what the teaching was talking about. So that's called Dhamma Vijaya. But I would encourage, you know, for most of us, less thinking rather than more. Because we do very easily just go into doubting and thinking, doubting and thinking, doubting and thinking. And that's a cycle which is quite common, where you'll ask yourself a question and then answer intellectually, but you won't see that the problem is you keep asking yourself questions. So you create a question that, which isn't really about your existential experience. It's just like, I wonder what that means. And then, you know, I wonder what rebirth really works like. And then you'll think about it. So you'll create a doubt. And you think, well, the solution is having an answer. And very easily the mind can go from doubt to answer, doubt to answer, doubt to answer. But it's just caught in a loop of thinking. That's not Dhamma Vijaya. That's thinking. Plain and simple. So be careful of that. And so often the questions that come from folk are you can see they can be very intelligent questions, but they're always just driven by a habit of doubt, and not being able to see that doubt is just a type of mindset. That's all. Once you know it as a mindset, fine. You don't have to go to thought. And that's so important, because otherwise you tend not to be able to get out of the thinking realm, or you give too much credit to thinking sometimes. And yet in the ordinary world, if you have a doubt about a computer program that's not working, you get into it and you solve it, right? So it's not a dismissal of that kind of thinking. But to begin to incline towards the silence of the mind is most skillful to do. And beginning to just, like as I was saying at the start of the retreat, tuning into that silence. Before I go on with that, then Nisanka, you had another question. You said that the lady where she had this horrible thought of popping the baby's eyes out, and we were just talking about that. But we said there's actually nothing evil about that. That thought was neither good nor bad. It was weird. It was totally weird. But there's no reason she should feel guilty about that. But it'd be pretty hard not to, because it just came up. She didn't wake up in the morning and think, oh yeah, let's think that, obviously. So it's not self. It's not her. Not who she really is. And Ajahn Sumedho asks her, did you do it? Well, of course not. You know, so just the arising of something which seems evil is not your fault. You're not wrong for that. It's just don't do it. Don't go there. Where do these things come from? A bad television show, who knows, right? So the willingness to see that in our experience of memory or whatever, all kinds of bizarre things can come up. We keep sila, but we don't believe that that's who we really are. And so her reaction was natural, but it was really not her fault. It wasn't her fault at all. So that's important in terms of what does compassion really mean? And compassion would mean, or acceptance, is that all this stuff is possible. The most bizarre, cruel thoughts came up, but it's not you. It's not who you are. And I hope it doesn't happen. But you can imagine, maybe maybe she watched some weird movie when she was 13 years old, and that just probably, you know, and then seeing a baby triggered off that memory. You know, who knows how these things work. Becoming an ambulatory catatonic, you're still functioning, you're still doing, But now you're trying to do the doing from a place of awareness, knowing, that kind of thing. So always the stress is on the knowing. And if, you know, it seems to me if you get really conversant with that and do it a lot, then that practice is 24/7. It's not restricted to the object of meditation. So the object hopefully facilitates that. I mean, that's the kind of language I find useful for myself, with awareness, with rather than of. Because sometimes you just sort of, we get, like if we have something negative come up in the mind, we have to work on this now. We have to work on my negativity. And somehow we get so glued into the negativity, right, that we don't let it go. We think we have to fix it or understand it or analyze it. And that can be tremendously important if there are issues of repression and, you know, all kinds of things like that. I'm not dismissing that, but sometimes we can get so into the kind of mood that we just get attached to it from a good intention. Whereas if you can, like, say, oh, this feels horrible, and where is the... I'm going to practice knowing with horribleness. And that takes a lot of space. Sounds like you can't do it, but actually you can do that if you play around. If you have that mindset, I have to sort this out, and I have to analyze this, and I have to understand this, that has its place if you've never understood these things. But for most of us, we kind of understand our neuroses, right? You know, we've seen them, 2 million times? So, like, there's no real need to analyze it anymore. You kind of know, okay, there goes the neurotic viradhammo, fine. Now, how can I be, knowing with neurotic viradhammo, rather than think I've got a problem? Yeah, it's just neurosis. So, I think our culture sometimes over-psychologizes things. And psychology has been a fantastic thing in Western culture, but then I do feel sometimes there's almost a need to always figure stuff out or analyze it. And that, to me, could mean that you're constantly engaged with objects, and you're not coming to the object less, if you see what I mean. So I don't want to dismiss these things, because these are fabulous things, but sometimes we overdo it. Like, sometimes I think people think that just to let go is, oh, you know, you're repressing it. You have to express it, you know, punch the pillow. No, you don't have to. Sometimes, yeah, but you don't have to do that. You don't have to follow it. So if it kind of depends on what you trust in. I trust in awareness, working stuff out. So let's just do some meditation. I'll just use the end of the out-breath again, just to start things off and see how that feels. Using sound. So receptive awareness, sound is like this. And there's the still knowing. And notice this, you're not like searching for something, but you know what it is. Sound. Then feeling the breathing of the body. And then the end of the out-breath and the still knowing. So establish still knowing, stillness of knowing, and then ride it all the way to the end of the out-breath. So that's the balance. Balance right to the end of the out-breath. And the end of the out-breath is very interesting in terms of physiology of breathing. Sometimes there's a lot of tension in the hands or the shoulders and the in-breath. But now it's the still knowing, right, to the end of the out-breath. So you tune in to that. Stay tuned or balanced.